This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, and maybe with you if you have a question for Zorba. Here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. So many reasons to stick around during the program. Research one of those reasons. What have we this time, Zorba?
Cocoa. A hot cup of cocoa may keep your brain bright and not demented.
Oh, isn't that interesting? What else?
The reason to take cocoa. And diet pills. The new diet pill, Aleve, does it work? How does it work? Is this going to encourage women and men, young women and young men, to engage in taking too many diet pills for their anorexia or bulimia? Some concern on the horizon.
And thanks to Brooklyn, New York listener Suzanne Cookson, we have a yummy recipe.
Yes, Suzanne's spicy Thai veggies.
Oh, Thai is good.
Thai is good. Veggies are good. Spicy is really good.
You want to stick around for the medical myth buster as well here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Let's see now, Zorba, if we can help a listener in St. Louis, Missouri. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I am struggling with hives, chronic hives. And I think they're stress related. And I definitely think that other people out there must be dealing with the same thing, and I thought maybe Dr. Zorba could give me some insight.
Can I ask what sort of stress you're going through right now?
Well, I'll tell you, the hives make me pretty stressed out. I get one on my lip, and I start worrying about, you know, I'm going to be meeting with, I'm going to be going to work, and I'm going to be worried about, you know, it getting bigger, and then I get more hives, and then they make me itch, and itching makes me more stressed out.
So it's kind of a circular thing. One hive leads to worry about hives and leads to another hive, you think? And Zorba,
I do. And I also, you know, I have a somewhat stressful job, and I try to, you know, keep that under check.
You mean, Tom, so one hive leads to another. That's exactly it. How long have you had these hives?
I would say probably over the last 10 years. I think it started about when I was 27. I'm 36 now.
You've had them for a long time.
Yeah, but now this chronic stuff, this recently in the last month or two, has been crazy. It's been almost every day. It starts in the afternoon.
How many doctors have you seen for this?
I've probably seen four or five different doctors.
Right,
and now,
right.
And now I'm thinking about getting a steroid shot, and I'm a little worried about that.
Mm-hmm. You're thinking of getting a steroid shot because the hives have recently become much worse, or what?
Yes, because they are more on my face, and driving me a little bit crazy.
Right, and no one has come up with the diagnosis as to if there is a cause and what's causing it. Other than the possibility of stress.
I've heard a lot of theories, but nothing conclusive.
Well, there are a lot of theories. The main theory is this. We know that hives are caused by, for instance, insect bites, certain foods, certain things that you inhale, certain things that might bite you, like I said, like insect bites and other things. We know that those can cause hives for many people. Drugs obviously cause hives. But then there's a great big realm of other things, things such as cold weather, viral infections. And then within their realm, there is a group of people, such as yourself, who have hives. And we don't know what it is. Something triggered your immune system, and you just periodically get triggered from some reason that we don't have an answer to.
You didn't mention stress. Is that common?
Well, it's interesting. But it's a chicken and egg thing. Like you said, when you have hives, it makes you stressful. And when you're stressed, you may have hives. But also, I'm sure you've noticed times, I assume, that nothing has happened, and all of a sudden you get a hive out of nowhere. Is that
right? Yes, right. Definitely.
I've got a couple of suggestions. First of all, there's nothing wrong with a bit of steroids if you're having a flare to get things to settle down. Now, steroids do have effects. They do have side effects. But in the short run, we use them all the time just to sort of get things to cool down. So a shot of steroids or some steroid pills certainly could be on the horizon and certainly may help you function with this. But you need to have a series of tests and get another opinion from an allergist, kind of either out of that area or at a referral center. You've seen allergists for this?
I did when I lived in Dallas. I saw an allergy specialist who was actually, you know, I mean, but
and you're and you are in St. Louis.
Yes.
And in St. Louis, they have wonderful, wonderful medical care. They have some great allergists. They've got great allergy referral centers. You know, you've got two medical schools there. They graduate some very, very fine people, both Washington University and St. Louis University. My recommendation is that you need to see an allergist. You need to see somebody who has an interest in hives and autoimmune disease. When you get a referral, either you talk to your doctor, your friends, or somebody else in the medical community, you want to go to someone who has an interest in hives. Now, a lot of allergists have an interest in giving shots and taking care of seasonal allergies and so on. That's not the allergist you want to go to. You want to go to somebody who really is into hives. You know, hives are them kind of a thing. And that's the allergist you want to go to, seriously. And it may be at one of the university centers or one of the allergists who graduated from there, but that's what my recommendation is.
Those Dallas allergists don't know anything.
They don't know much in Dallas.
The St. Louis
allergists.
They don't
even carry a show, so I don't even think we'll talk about these. That's how much they know. They don't even know good medical radio when they hear it. That's right. You can't trust them down there in Dallas. But seriously, what happens is you need another opinion. Somebody interested in allergies, you know, a good trained allergist is what you need, because you need some testing to see what might be going on and what can be done to block this, because there are things you need to do. Steroid shot temporarily, okay. Allergist, though, right away.
And good luck with this, too.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for the call. 800-462-7413. Zorba, we have a listener with us now in Norman, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I am a baby boomer, and I am a healthy one. And what I am calling Dr. Zorba for today is to find out how to jumpstart my metabolism. I eat all the healthy foods that I think that are right, but I still need to lose about 10 pounds.
So you want to, what do you mean by jump-starting your metabolism?
Do things that make it go faster or burn more calories.
Uh-huh.
That's
you
what
know,
I mean.
You know, it's very interesting. One of the issues that we have in our society is we have, you know, we can easily get a hold of food. You know, food is all over. I had a Tibetan doctor, and the first comment he made after he was here for a week, he said, "You people eat everywhere." I said, "What do you mean?" And we were in the middle of a hospital setting. He said, "Just do a 360 and look around." And I did a 360, and there were three people munching at their tables. And we're in the middle of the hospital, you know, where, you know, but there's food on one table, there's a little coffee, there's part of a donut. It was in the morning, and I thought, he's right. We sort of eat everywhere. So the first issue, you know, with weight loss is you've got to reduce calories besides what your normal caloric intake is. What is your height? What's your weight?
My height is 5'4".
Okay.
And I weigh 147 pounds.
Okay. And you'd like to lose about 10 pounds.
So, yes.
So you need roughly about 2,000 calories plus or minus 100 calories. First step is to figure out what the calories are that you're eating. 99% of the time you're eating more calories. You're either at 2,000 or 2,100, and you need to go to about a 1,600 calorie diet to lose weight. That's step one.
Okay.
In other words, no matter what you're eating, you got to eat less. That's step one. And what you do to jumpstart your metabolism is you exercise more than what you're doing. How much exercise are you getting?
I walk.
How often?
I'm a walker and a stair person.
Okay.
I do three flights of stairs constantly all day. But
okay.
When
that's
I'm not
good.
At work, I walk.
Okay.
I eat yogurt from the health food store.
Mm-hmm.
I eat fresh fruit, fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Then it's a quantity issue.
Okay.
It's a quantity issue, and that's exactly it. You eat yogurt, look at your yogurt, look at what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some yogurts, a container of yogurt is 250 calories. That's as much as a Snickers. So
mm-hmm.
a container of yogurt has as many calories as a Snickers. In fact, a Snickers is 210 calories. You know, and that's equivalent to about four Oreos, or three Oreos are a Snickers, roughly. So, I mean, I look, you know, you've got to know where these calories are. Tom is smiling, but, I mean, that's really, you know, you've got to look at a container of yogurt or Snickers, but other containers of yogurt are 110 calories, so it's distinctly less. Now, I'm not saying that Snickers are as good for you as yogurt, but from a caloric point of view of losing weight, it's the same in the body. 210 calories of Snickers, 210 calories of Pepsi or Coke, and 210 calories of yogurt. From a body point of view, it's all calories, and it's going to keep it on. So you got to pull back on the food. That's step one. That jumpstarts your metabolism.
Okay.
So if you're walking, if you're going upstairs, you got that started. What you got to do is bring back those calories to about 1,600 calories.
About 1,600?
That's about what you need.
And also, I am on Zetia for cholesterol, which I inherited from my wonderful relative.
Uh-huh, of course. So you inherited the good things, too, though, you know, besides the Zetia, right?
Yeah. Oh, I beg your pardon?
The good things. There were good things you inherited from your relatives.
Of course.
Like being smart enough to listen to public radio.
There you go. That's exactly
that's
it.
A really
that's,
smart
that's right.
thing. You bet. Absolutely. Especially you two. You all the bomb. I thank you so much for that. But, yes, I do eat the raw vegetables, and I do eat lots of beans, and I do eat lots of salads, and that's without the dressing and all that.
Right,
so it's
right.
Just,
so you're doing some good
maintaining
stuff.
Maintaining and just being healthy.
1,600 calories of healthy food. That's what it is. It is a portion issue.
Okay.
Good
and
luck.
I thank you so much.
Thank
oh,
you very
pleasure,
much. We appreciate
pleasure. It's
the
our
call.
Pleasure to be here.
800-462-7413. Well, we talk about chocolate a lot, Zorba, but you mentioned some research now on cocoa.
That's right. Cocoa. Amazing. This is, you know, dementia, cocoa. It's very interesting. Cocoa has flavonoids, and basically these flavonoids are antioxidants that are found in cocoa beans, and they may increase the flow to the brain. And this was an article that came out of the University of Nottingham, and these were women given drinks of cocoa high in flavonoids and flavanols. And basically there was a significant difference when they looked at them with what are called functional magnetic resonance imaging in the blood flow to the brain. In other words, those who basically drank flavonoids had a greater blood flow to the brain. Now, whether or not that will decrease dementia remains to be seen. But we know the blood flow in some forms of dementia, not Alzheimer's, is important. We know that people who have what's called small vessel disease, less of a blood flow to the brain, develop dementia. And it's, you know, it means that cocoa may actually improve that blood flow, and that's good.
Do we know why that would happen?
Well, because it tastes so good. Cocoa tastes so good. That's exactly it. It's, you know, it tastes so good. I mean, you know, chocolate obviously is made with cocoa, and that tastes really good. But cocoa, because we don't really know why. We're not sure. I mean, this is, now that we've got functional magnetic resonance imaging, we can begin to look at blood flow and how certain things that affect it. And this may open up the arteries so that there's just a greater flow. But no, that's step two.
Even though we're not sure of the dementia thing, this cannot be anything but good news.
Absolutely, because it's good news for the cocoa drinkers of America. It's good news for the cocoa.
My wife has cocoa every
day. All the time. And how's her brain? Sharp as ever?
Better than mine.
Better than yours.
Lots better than mine.
You see, you need that hot cup of cocoa once a day or twice a day. How often does she take cocoa?
Once a day, I think.
You know, it's funny. I think of cocoa as a cold weather drink where you sit up and it's windy outside and the snow is blowing and you have hot cocoa. I have no idea why. I don't think of that with coffee. Or tea.
I never drink cocoa.
Well, you see, that's your problem.
Yeah.
You can't remember to drink cocoa every day. You see, you need cocoa for your memory.
That 800 number. What's that 800
that's right.
number
that's
again?
Right. That's four, right.
Let me look at it. Oh, yeah, 462-7413, it says here. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Cedar Falls, Iowa. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba. I love your show.
Thank you very much. How can we help you?
Well, let's see. My question is, on a recent show, Doctor, you were talking about how cervical cancer is typically a result of an STD. And my question was basically, how likely is it that, you know, a 26, 28-year-old woman might have, you know, what might be cervical cancer? And could that be a result of an STD? Or at that kind of an age, would that be more likely to be something that would be hereditary?
Well, no. Human. We now know that, for the most part, cervical cancer is caused by HPV infection. That's human papillomavirus. It is a viral infection. So that's what we know. That we've known for many, many years that cervical cancer is exceedingly rare. I don't know if it exists, or exceedingly rare among women who have never had sexual relations. So we know that HPV is responsible for most, it might be all, I'm not sure about that, that's still an issue, but most cervical cancer. And we know that HPV is spread by having sexual relations. That's what we know. Now, what are the chances? Well, if the woman is 26 and a virgin, which is about 5% of the population or 3% of the population at the age of 26, the chances in that group, of course, is small. But the chance is, if a woman is not a virgin, is obviously greater. Now, if the woman has had a monogamous relationship with a man who has had a monogamous relationship, neither one has had sex with anybody else, well, she's not going to get cervical cancer. Now, that doesn't mean she doesn't need a pap test, because there still is a question as to whether or not some cervical cancers are not caused by HPV. But so to answer your question, at the age of 26, it depends. If she was a promiscuous 26-year-old, the chances of having an HPV infection are greater. Now, most HPV infections do not end up with cervical cancer. It's only a few that do. Most of them, the body fights it, the virus stays there, and there's no change that goes on in the cervix. But for, you know, for some women, 10 or 20, I think 10,000 women, 8,000 women die a year from cervical cancer. That's a result of this viral infection.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. Well, the reason I asked that is because her mother actually did have a hysterectomy. She ended up having cervical cancer herself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I was kind of curious, you know, as to maybe it was, you know, congenital or.
It's not really. There's not really a hereditary component. It's as I said. It's not. It doesn't fit with that range. And what percentage is caused by the infection and what percentage is not is still open to to discussions with that. But for the most part, it's that. And that's why the new immunizations, Gardasil, which I believe should be given to young women, mm-hmm. will help wipe out cervical cancer. And I think that every single state in the union should. It should be like measles, mumps, and German yep. measles. You can opt out for your child, but if you don't opt out, your child needs the immunization.
We talked about that in a previous program, Zorba.
We did.
And what we
did.
Didn't talk about is what happens 10, 15, 20 years from now if we suddenly should discover that maybe this immunization isn't as safe as we now think it is. Has it been tested enough?
Well, it's been tested
people,
a lot. The immunization,
for people to really be able to rely on it.
It has been tested as well as any other immunization. It's been tested, I think, for 5 to 8 years, and that's as good as immunizations are. It's as good as drugs are. You know, you don't test a drug for 20 years and find out if there's a side effect 20 years later. You test it. You look at certain things, liver function tests. You look at the way the body responds, you know, and if it fits normal safety data, then you can say fairly well that the drug is safe, that the immunization is safe. The thing about immunizations that we don't like is it's a shot. If it were a pill, it's always accepted much more. If I said, I can give you a pill, take it once, you won't get cervical cancer, you would have many more people take it than come into the office and I'll give you
we're
a shot.
We're more worried about
more
something
worried about a shot.
Shot into us.
More worried about a shot. When in fact, you know, the drugs that kill us, alcohol, you know, is a pill, tobacco we inhale. They're not things we get by injection. If you look at the number of people who die from injections, it's actually very small compared to the number of people who die of ingestibles.
Yeah, interesting. Let's fulfill our truck driver advice quota now, Zorba. We received a note from Ricky in Jacksonville, Florida. Ricky is a truck driver who has anxiety attacks anytime he has to drive across a long bridge. Talk about your occupational
wow.
hazards. He would like to know if there's any natural remedy he could use to curb that anxiety.
Well, one natural remedy is to avoid caffeine during that time. That's step one, because caffeine will increase the pulse. When the pulse increases, it will also
that's
increase
tough
the
for
anxiety.
Truck drivers who
very tough.
Kind of live on
very
caffeine.
Tough. But if you have a big, long bridge, and I assume this is not a bridge that goes, you know, a small bridge. We're talking about a long bridge,
yeah.
And a long bridge is a long bridge. So that would be step number one. One of the other things that I would recommend is an herbal tea, such as Celestial Seasonings, Sleepy Time Tea, which doesn't make you sleep, but there's some herbs in there that may help you relax. Mm. And an herbal tea may help. That is a relaxation herbal tea. Finally, if you're looking at something, melatonin, which we use for sleep but doesn't actually make you fall asleep, melatonin for some people gives them some relaxation. And so melatonin would be another thing that I would use. And, of course, he knows when he's going down, you know, when he's going to get to the long bridge, and just kind of preparing for this, taking the melatonin, not having the caffeine and so on, having a cup of herbal tea before that may help.
Interesting.
All those things.
Well, don't have any anxiety over sending us your comment, question, or tip. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Lots more coming up. More of your calls. We have our medical myth buster. But next in line, our recipe. And this one is a listener-supplied recipe from Suzanne Cookson. Coming up here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again, if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But now, of course, it is recipe time, and we welcome the listener who supplied this week's recipe from Brooklyn, New York, Suzanne Cookson. Suzanne, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. Thanks so much for sending in the recipe. This one is for Suzanne's, aren't you an egomaniac, naming this after Suzanne's spicy Thai veggies, right?
Yes.
How'd you come up with this one?
Well, I'm always looking for the exotic and, you know, shake up the routine a bit. So I was in a Thai mood one night, and I happened to have a bunch of interesting ingredients on hand, and I was in the mood for veggies, so put together some of these Thai ingredients and came up with this.
I noticed that among the veggies are eggplant and zucchini.
Yes.
I'm not a big eggplant fan, and I'm not a big zucchini fan either.
Well, Tom, after this, you're going to love eggplant and zucchini.
Now, what
I love it, Tom. She's right.
What makes
you're going to love eggplant and zucchini.
What makes you say that?
Because I made this and brought it into work, and my boss absolutely loathes eggplant and zucchini, sort of how you feel about tofu.
Yeah.
And he tried this, and he was like, no eggplant, no zucchini. He tried it, and he couldn't believe it. It's the first time he's ever enjoyed either of them, and he asked me for the recipe.
Oh. You see, if Suzanne's boss loved it, and if Suzanne's boss asked her for the recipe, it's obvious, Tom. You're going to have to eat this.
I'm becoming a believer. Now, is this served with, you have meat in here?
Tom is shocked if he would possibly have a meal without meat. I mean, a meatless meal is not a meal in his realm of life.
Well, that's pretty much true. But you use meat in this sometimes.
Well, you could. You could do this with a fish, which I love to do. And I wrap it up in the banana leaf, actually, and pour the sauce in there and bake it.
Wow.
Or you can add, I know you'll love this, Tom, tofu.
Or a little tempeh, which would be good. Which would be good. Yeah, I think this is something you're going to try, right?
Well, let's run through the ingredients and put it all together, and then we'll see.
And then you'll see.
Yeah.
Okay.
And feel free, Suzanne, to jump in here as we do go through the ingredients.
And I may ask you a few questions. Okay, so we start out, first of all, this serves six people.
Okay.
Start out with 3 cloves of garlic, finely chopped.
Or minced. Easier.
Okay.
Oh, okay, 3 cloves of garlic, finely chopped or minced.
2 tablespoonfuls of grated ginger. Now, two tablespoonfuls of grated ginger.
Right.
You keep your ginger in the freezer or in the refrigerator?
Well, I use it enough that I keep it in the fridge. I go through it pretty quickly.
What I do is I like it in the freezer because I find it grates really, really easily. Try it. Put it in the freezer. Put it in the freezer in a Ziploc bag, and then what you do is you grate it. It is the simplest thing in the world to grate out of the freezer. Yeah, that's what I do. What do you do, Tom?
I go to the restaurant and order
something with ginger, right? That's
right.
What you do.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Even easier. 1/2 teaspoon of ground pepper, black pepper.
Right.
Half a little tea, coarse ground pepper.
2 tablespoons of lime juice from
and
a fresh
lime. If you like tangier veggies, you can put more if you like.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
Tangy's good.
Yeah. Now, limes, fresh limes, of course, you use because you need 3/4 teaspoon of lime zest. Right.
Yes. And so, you need to grate it. And, you know, lime zest, it's kind of hard to get a nice, finely grated lime zest. You need to grate it for a while. And it sounds like a little, but it's a lot when you're grating it.
But it's a lot when you grate. So with lime juice, how much, getting back to the juice, how much juice do you tend to use? A tablespoonful, 2, 3? You just kind of pour it in or use it from
I use the fresh lime juice, and it depends. I love them tangy. Sometimes I'll go, you know, for more tablespoons, I'll go for 3 or 4.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And other times I'll just do the 2.
Mm-hmm. 3 tablespoonfuls of roasted chili paste, and this is in a jar.
Yeah, and, well, you can buy the one that's prepared, like the Thai products in the ethnic aisle, or what I like to do is I get the chili powder, but not chili, the one you use for making chili. This is chile powder, which is really a ground powdered red pepper.
Oh.
Yeah, and I get that in another ethnic store.
Uh-huh.
Brooklyn in New York is great for this. I just go to whatever ethnic store, but you can get the actual powdered red pepper, and just add a little water and make your own paste.
Wow, that must be really good then.
Mm-hmm.
By
and if
the
you
way,
like it spicier, you can add more too.
You can add more. You have to be very careful with red chili powder because if you sneeze, it'll destroy your mucous membranes around your eyes and your nose. I can just imagine. I can just imagine that. You know, I'm very careful because many, many years ago, I touched my eyes after I was doing something with a jalapeno pepper. Mm-hmm. Never again will I do that. That was like scratched my eyes and it was like pain for hours.
Try the habanero pepper.
Exactly.
That one will really go up your nose.
So the powder is C-H-I-L-E. Get it in ethnic aisle. A teaspoon of brown sugar.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, a little, some brown sugar in
there.
Teaspoon of salt.
A little salt.
Can of light coconut milk. You like the light milk, right? Less fat, less calories.
And
I
you
think
can
it's
even get
idea.
It organic these days as well.
Which is really good. And I think it's a great idea. Might as well cut down on the calories there. One eggplant sliced. How do you slice it? Do you peel it before you slice it?
I don't peel it. I believe in skin. You know, if I get it organic, I just keep the skin on. And I do about a half an inch sliced.
Mm-hmm. So rounds, half an inch rounds that you put in there. One zucchini cut in a julienne style.
Right.
Zucchini.
What does that mean?
Julienne. Kind of lengthwise with the, you know, like, I mean, that's what you're talking about, right? Cutting it in.
Exactly. Sort of it just looks prettier when you have the eggplant circle, you know, in circular.
Yeah, so julienne, you know, if you, green beans, Tom, remember the green beans? Either they're cut like the circles, like the little cylinders, or they're julienne.
Oh, the diagonally sort of.
They,
my mom used to slice green beans.
Right. See, your mom, see? Yeah. Well, your mom had a lot of, she was good at that.
Slicing green beans?
Sorry.
I guess.
I was actually thinking of my mom, who was only good at opening up the can. I had never had a fresh green bean in my life until I went to college. We never had squash. In fact, I remember I went to a friend's house, and they had squash, and I said, what's this, a new vegetable? And they looked at me and rolled their eyes. They were from New York. They looked at me and rolled my eyes as if, you know, what, are you from the backwoods of a foreign state? This is called squash. One summer squash cut julienne also.
A summer squash.
A cup of string beans cut in half.
Oh, here's some string beans.
And this adds a nice crunch to it.
Has to be fresh. Yeah. Quarter cup of torn basil leaves, firmly packed. So you tear the basil leaves so they aren't big and pack them. You get that in the ethnic grocery store too?
You can buy that. Yeah. Well, again, in New York, you just get that with the produce.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. But let me tell you, not in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, you get milk and cheese with the produce. That's what you do. You don't get basil. You don't get basil. If you want something special, you get eggs. That's about it. Milk, cheese, and eggs. That's what you get in Wisconsin.
Talk about backwoods.
And then you get some
shame
beer.
Shame on you.
Then
we
you
aren't
get
that
some,
backwoods.
Then you get some beer on the way out. And you got the real Wisconsin meal. No, no, we're not that. We're not that bad. But we're not as diverse in many cases as that. You know, you have a large group of diverse people.
Yeah.
And one large banana leaf.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the banana leaves, I know those probably aren't very common either, but if you go to your Asian or Latin grocery store, you could usually find them there in a package. They're really plantain leaves, you know, the really big ones.
Right.
And nowadays you can even order them online. And the beauty of a plantain or banana leaf is that it gives it this subtle flavor that really you cannot get without using the banana leaves.
Really? Because I would say, well, I can't get banana leaves, so I'm not going to. You can order them online.
Yes,
and they
you can
come,
order them online.
Do they
and
come
then
in
you can freeze them.
What
no, they come in a package.
They come in a package.
Yes, and they're frozen, so you could keep them in your freezer. I always keep some banana leaves, you know, on hand if I want to wrap fish or if I want to. You can wrap anything in a banana leaf, and it just comes out delicious.
Oh, it also looks really interesting.
Yes.
I mean, it looks exotic. You know,
it
that's
does.
Preparation. I'm into preparation. My wife is really into preparation.
I have no idea what a banana leaf looks like or tastes like.
It's big. It's a big leaf.
Big, green, and beautiful.
Big, green, and
guess I've seen them growing. But,
so preheat the oven at 375 degrees. Then combine the garlic, ginger, pepper, lime juice, and zest, chili paste, brown sugar, and salt in a small bowl. Once combined, add the coconut milk and mix. So you add the coconut milk last.
Yes.
Then arrange the eggplant, zucchini, squash, and string beans in a baking dish.
Oh, we're baking this.
Mm-hmm.
375 degrees. Pour the garlic, chili, coconut mixture over the veggies and sprinkle basil on the top. So the basil's on the top.
Yeah. Place Make sure the veggies sort of swim in, you know, you're getting all the veggies
in the
covered.
Juice, in the juice. Mm-hmm. Place the banana leaf on top, covering the veggies completely. And if you don't have a banana leaf, use aluminum foil. But obviously the banana leaf is better if you can get it, but you can certainly do it with foil.
Yes.
Bake it for 20 20 minutes, take the cover off and bake for another 5 minutes to sort of get, get the essentially the water, a little bit of the water out of the mixture. Turn off the oven and let the veggies sit there for 10 minutes to cool off and for the sauce to thicken, and serve with jasmine rice.
Ooh.
I'm game.
This sounds delicious.
Oh, look at that. You hear what he said?
It does.
He said this sounds delicious. At the beginning, he said, I'm not hankering
to eggplant. Well, I like spicy stuff. I like Asian food.
Yeah,
it sounds delicious.
You'd love this.
It sounds delicious. We got to do this. This sounds wonderful.
The eggplant is wonderful because it absorbs the mixture so well, so it doesn't taste like eggplant.
Wow. And you see, eggplant, the issue is often when you make eggplant, you have to put oil on it and you have to either grill it or saute it. But this will absorb it because eggplant sort of yearns for something that absorbs into it. It's fabulous. Thank you so much for this
recipe.
Suzanne,
thank you very much.
This is wonderful. Yeah. Just wonderful. Mm.
Well, for sending us this winning recipe, and it really sounds like a winner to me, Suzanne gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's really easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
zorba@wpr.org.
For today's recipe, send a stamp, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
Or come to our website at zorbapastor.org. When you go on the site, you can get a podcast of this recipe and past recipes. Come look at it. There's some nifty things at the website. You can look at the resource page. You can see Tom and I. It's wonderful. Come over to the website and enjoy.
Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Want to talk with Zorba? 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, listener with us now in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate the call. How can we help you?
Recently, I was advised by a physician to increase my salt intake, which struck me as kind of odd because normally people are told to decrease salt intake, so it got me to thinking.
Did he or she say why you're supposed to increase your salt intake?
I believe the purpose was to try to make sure that I was not getting dehydrated. But it made me wonder, what does salt do in the body that makes it important to have enough but dangerous to have too much?
Yeah. Well, there are a couple of things about salt. First of all, there's really not a danger in salt. It's that we get a lot of salt in our society. So, the idea that you need salt, I guess the first question is, how did the doctor come up with the diagnosis that you needed salt? Did they do some blood tests or something else?
They did do a couple of blood tests. I had gone in with symptoms of not necessarily lightheadedness, but feeling like I was going to pass out.
Okay.
Hearing my heart beating in my head and feeling like sounds were getting really distant, including the sound of my own voice as I was talking to people, and it was happening if I'd get up and stand after sitting for a while at my desk at work, for instance.
Mm-hmm. What was your blood pressure?
110 over 70-something.
Mm-hmm. Tell me the doctor who told you to increase the salt intake was, what kind of a physician?
A general physician.
Mm-hmm. Older, younger?
Younger.
Younger physician.
What difference does that make?
Well, there were
No.
But a number of older doctors, and I'm talking about in their 60s and 70s,
yeah,
during training, often were trained with the idea that we need sometimes to take salt pills. We need to take sodium, especially in the summertime. And actually, we know that for the most part, people get too much salt in their, they get a lot of salt. Some people said they get too much salt. There's still no evidence salt causes high blood pressure. But for some people who have heart problems and high blood pressure problems, they have to limit their salt. And there was a lot on salt 30 years ago, a lot of discussion about salt back and forth. For the most part, we pulled back. And other than for people who are on a very strict diet, I've never, ever told anyone they have to increase their salt intake or take salt pills. So I question this diagnosis. If it were done by an endocrinologist and they were looking at something having to do with what are called mineral corticoid metabolism, where they said you're losing sodium, or if it was done by a nephrologist, a kidney specialist, and they said you have a salt-losing causing nephropathy. So you're losing sodium. You've got to replace it because your kidneys are a sieve and they're losing it. That would be different. So, but I guess I questioned the diagnosis, and you came in with, you know, this diagnosis of sort of fainting, and the doctor said, well, you need more salt. I don't buy it. I guess that's a long way of saying that.
We need a little salt for the iodine.
No. There's iodine in salt, but we get a lot of salt in our society.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a normal diet, or are you a vegan? I don't mean to say that in a negative way.
I have a normal diet.
No, some people are vegans or on very strict diets. So.
And I do cook with salt, so it's not like I don't have any salt.
I don't think you need salt. I don't think that's an issue. Okay. I think that you may have had a faint type episode, or sort of this episode can come from things such as viral infections, fatigue, low blood sugar. There are a bunch of things, but I very seriously question the diagnosis that you should increase your salt and you will faint less.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling. Zorba, let's take time now for a listener tip. Maybe I should say listener's tip, because we heard from a lot. Not too long ago, we shared a concern from a New York woman who was having trouble with stained hands after chopping fruits and veggies all day. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
She was using bleach to clean her hands?
Correct.
Well, our phone line and inbox were soon flooded with advice for the Big Apple cook. And a majority of our listeners suggested that the woman try lemon juice instead. It doesn't matter if it's bottled or fresh, they say, and they swear, that is our listeners, it will work.
Well, that's a good point. It's much more natural, and it's not as caustic on the skin as bleach. So that sounds good to me.
You will agree with our listeners.
I think it's a great idea. Lemon juice is the way to go.
So I guess if life hands you lemons, wash your hands. Keep those tips coming. Just send them along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
And don't go away. We have our medical myth buster coming up. Before that, we have some new research and more of your calls, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. But before we get back to the phones, Zorba, talk about a new diet pill. This one apparently named after the former heavyweight champion. If you take this pill, you'll be able to float like a butterfly.
I love it. Right, Ali. Yeah. Ali is the name of the pill. That's right. You'll float like a butterfly. I don't think so, but that's an interesting name. Maybe they were thinking about that. You know, they spend a lot of time thinking about names. But Orlistat is a drug that has been on the market for probably about 7 years. Not a lot of people used it for weight loss because the drug has some side effects, and now it's going to be over the counter, and I very much support it. But a number of patients, parents, other patients say, wait a minute, this drug is going to be abused and we're going to see more anorexia and bulimia from a drug like this.
Yeah, you'll worry a little bit about a diet pill that you can just get
without a prescription. You know, I worry more about obesity in this country. You know, we get fatter and fatter and fatter and heavier and heavier and heavier every year. Are we supposed to outlaw food? You know, I'm sorry, you've got your 2,500 calories today, Mrs. Smith. You can't have any more calories.
Give me a break.
Yeah. Oh, no, you can't do that at all. When we look at the drug, though, the drug has some self-limiting issues. The drug basically blocks fat from getting into the body. And so what happens is it's called a messy drug. That is, you tend to have diarrhea with it. You tend to have a lot of flatus. That's gas. You know, you have lots of gas, lots of flatus. So you can just tell you're looking at me thinking it was going to take
this drug. Why would people want to take this?
And is it they want to lose weight.
Is it really effective?
Yeah, the drug, you can lose 10 to 20 pounds with the drug. The drug has been shown to lose 10 to 20 pounds. Stop the drug, weight goes back on. That's basically what happens so far with all the diet drugs that we've seen. And the drug stops, but there's certain foods you can't eat, and the gas, and the smelly stool, and the diarrhea have basically limited the use of the drug. So GlaxoSmithKline went for over-the-counter use because they think they'll get more out of the drug, and I think it's fine. But I think it's very self-limiting, and I don't think that this drug is going to cause anorexia or bulimia any more than I believe that condoms produce premature sex. I mean, I think there's no proof for any of that stuff at all.
Are there other over-the-counter diet drug alternatives?
Well, there are a lot of diet drugs that are over-the-counter, but for the most part, they're junk. I mean, they're made, for the most part, with phenylephrine, and phenylephrine is not good for you.
So as far as losing weight, this is the best of the bunch over-the-counter?
Well, this is the best of the bunch that we have right now. We don't have some good drugs now. There are some good drugs that are coming down the pipeline, have not been approved. But at the present time, I think Orlistat, used correctly, can help you lose weight, and I think it's an appropriate drug for some people.
1-800-462-7413. Toll free, 800-462-7413. A listener with us now, Zorba, in Balsam Lake, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I am calling to get Zorba's opinion on magnets. I have been offered some products that, such as an infrared comforter, that supposedly will help relieve aches and pains, make you sleep better, you'll wake up more refreshed. You know, it even will cure fibromyalgia and that kind of thing. I'm just wondering, you know, what your opinion is on magnets.
Uh-huh. The magnet stuff is kind of interesting. There's been a lot of scientific stuff on magnets.
As we speak, I think, Zorba, correct me if I'm wrong, that the University of Wisconsin is doing some research on magnets,
yes,
of
mm-hmm.
all things. I always thought that was kind of in the bunk category.
Well, magnets are in the bunk category. There are a lot of magnets that are in the bunk category. They're the same as wearing copper bracelets for arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
You ever see? I mean, that was an old
thing.
But
why would a reputable university be doing a study on something?
Money. That's the reason. No. Money from the magnet people? No, that's not it. But because actually maybe magnets have some effect. We know magnets may have some effect. Certainly in magnetic fields, but there's no evidence in human health. That doesn't mean it doesn't work. So there are some research studies that are going on. There's no scientific proof now. But most importantly, when we look at complementary and alternative medicine, we have to look and say, what's the harm? What's the downside? And I differentiate things into drugs you take in your body and things you don't take in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a drug that you ingest, that you take into your body, that is manufactured by somebody who I don't know, made with a natural substance that I don't know about, that comes from this country or somewhere else, that is not regulated by the FDA, because they're not. They're regulated like a cosmetic. That has side effects.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to acupuncture, massage therapy, Reiki, all of the things that we do to the body, to me, it's a function of how do you feel.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a function of safety, because I don't consider safety to be the issue. So magnet safety is safe. So we don't have to think about that. It's efficacy. How do you feel now that you have a magnet? What's this infrared blanket you have, too?
Well, it's supposed to keep a constant temperature. And seemingly in the demonstration the week that we had, didn't have that problem.
How much was the infrared blanket?
Well, the whole package is around $5,000.
$5,000 for the magnet and the infrared blankets?
And it comes with a facial mask, eye mask, and a bunch of different stuff.
For $5,000, have you bought this yet?
No.
I do not recommend this product.
Okay.
I think that you are being fleeced, as we would say. Fleeced. $5,000 is a lot of money. I'm thinking, you know, if you can spend $50 or $100 and you get some magnets, that's fine. Infrared magnets. You know, blanket, I mean, come on.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can go to Sears and get a heating blanket or a heating pad easily for $45 or $50.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's heat within that. I think that they are selling you a bill of goods. My answer is forget it. You're being fleeced. So where did you hear about this thing anyway?
Well, a friend has been using it, and she's selling these products.
Uh-huh.
You know, kinda, I think it's kind of a pyramid kind of a deal.
It's definitely a pyramid type of deal. So she's using it, and she's selling it to others. And that's how some of these scams work. They
sure.
work on hope.
Yeah.
So good luck. Keep
Thank
your money.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate you. Taking this call.
Thanks for your
thank
call.
You very much. We appreciate the call. $5,000.
It's a lot of money, Tom. It's a lot of money.
800-462-7413. Zorba, let's get to our medical myth buster now. Today's myth is from a listener known only as Ms. Booth. And Ms. Booth would like to know, if gum really stays in your intestines for 7 years undigested... My mom used to tell me this. I've been swallowing my gum for years since school when the teacher would have me open my mouth to see if I was chewing it. Is there any health concern with chewing gum? Asks Ms. Booth.
That's very interesting. Now, I have to tell you, I have a little parochial interest in this. My father was in the gum business for about 10 years.
Yeah.
And in fact, we still have relatives in the gum business. The Gumball Factory on the web called thegumballfactory.com is my cousin's business, and he makes good money from selling gum. My dad would say, there's no evidence, my mother told me, you chew gum, and if you swallow it, it'll stop up your intestine. It doesn't just stay there for 7 years.
I used to hear that,
years.
Too, actually.
It'll stop it up. So all of a sudden, I thought, stop it up. You've got this image, Then all of a sudden, it stops up. You eat food, and that's it. You die.
All the gum is stopping the digestive process.
Now, let's look for a segment of this particular myth. If gum caused death in children, because more children eat gum and chewing gum, don't you think the feds would ban gum?
Yeah.
I think so. I think that whole myth came from the fact that they were saying, don't chew and eat, don't eat the gum. Because you got to chew it because keep it in your mouth. And I think the myth just came from the idea that you don't eat it like regular food. But it doesn't do that. It also, for the most part, really doesn't
Well,
get
you know,
digested.
There's a certain – I know it's not true, but there's a certain logic because you chew and chew and chew and chew and chew, and it doesn't go away. It's still there.
That's
so
right.
You
it's
think maybe
there.
If you swallow it,
That's
it
right.
wouldn't go away
That's
either.
Right. No. But it's not bad to eat. You can actually take gum and chew it and swallow it. And frankly – that's what I do most of the time.
Oh,
when I chew gum, I swallow
it. Swallow it, do you?
I
really?
Swallow it. Yeah, and I haven't stopped up yet, but 7 years. I've been doing this for my whole life. I must have a lot of gum that's stuck in my intestine. That's all I can say.
Send us a MythBuster you'd like us to bust. Just send it in an email with the subject titled MythBuster. Make sure to send that email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Galena, Missouri. Hi.
Hi, guys.
What's up?
Oh, I think I got a great question for
you.
I have recently been diagnosed with mold, so I was searching for an answer to this illness because I wasn't just treating the symptoms isn't making me better. So I found an alternative health doctor, and he started treating me with grapefruit seed extract, half my body weight in ounces of water, and jumping on a trampoline.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, medically, I have two doctors. One that's treating the symptoms without any diagnosis. And the other guy has diagnosed me, but he is completely holistic and does all herbal remedies.
Uh-huh. But let me ask you a question now. Jumping on the trampoline, that interests me a lot. How often were you jumping on the trampoline?
Well, when I first started, I wasn't able to jump hardly anything, a minute, twice a day.
So did you go buy a trampoline?
Yeah, I just went and bought one of those little tiny ones that go in the house.
Oh, one of little tiny, not a great big backyard trampoline where you do flips and somersaults and things like that. Did you jump on the... Now, why did he say you had to jump on the trampoline? That I'm not familiar with as a complementary remedy.
Yeah, it's to help clear the lymph system and all your organs of the mold with the water and the grapefruit seed extract.
Yeah, you know, mold is really interesting. First of all, we don't know where mold fits within a diagnosis of the human condition. There's some people who believe, very good researchers at Mayo Clinic, for instance, that chronic sinus infection is due to mold.
Our caller is not alone in being affected by mold.
Absolutely. There are other people who believe that mold in the house really does something, deteriorates your quality of life. And others say, no, it doesn't deteriorate your quality of life. You don't understand where mold really is, and it's not really within that realm and within that category. What I would recommend is this. Number one, continue with the jumping, because the jumping actually obviously does make a difference.
Keep on jumping.
I kind of like, keep on jumping. That's what I would say. Number two, if the extracts seem to work, I certainly would stay with them, and I would do the acupuncture. I think you're doing yourself no harm. Now, where mold fits, I want to tell you, we don't understand. So, you know, the naturopathic doctor says that mold is the cause of it. I'm not convinced one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're feeling better with this, I think I'd stick up with it. So,
all right. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. We appreciate the call. Zorba, before we go, let's grab a quick question from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from Joey in Northern Illinois. He's an alert label reader. And he writes, Dr. Pastor often advises people to take two Aleve tablets twice a day. I've looked at the bottle label from my cabinet, and according to it, two Aleve tablets are not to be taken in a 24-hour period.
So what's the question?
Well, the question is, are you wrong when you say to take two Aleve tablets twice a day?
No, I'm the doctor. I give advice. I'm the doctor.
But you don't want to recommend against what the label advice is.
Oh, it'd be a shame, wouldn't it? Let me explain what the label advice is.
Yeah.
When they decided to put naproxen over the counter, they said, we're going to limit its use. And the way they made it an over-the-counter drug was to limit the amount of naproxen that people are taking. So, for instance, a common therapeutic dose of naproxen, when I prescribe it, is 500 milligrams twice daily. And a Aleve tablet is 220 milligrams in each tablet. So what they did was they said, we're going to make it roughly, we're going to make it less than half the dose, one tablet twice a day. And then if you need more, they want you to talk to your doctor. In other words, if your pain is worse than this or you need more, you talk to your doctor. 500 milligrams of Aleve twice a day, which is naproxen, is a very common dose. Sometimes we'll do liver function tests once a year to see how your liver is, but most people can tolerate that. The feds wanted the over-the-counter dose so that they would make sure that they took care of the safety issues for some people who do not tolerate that.
So for most people,
absolutely.
This is okay.
Absolutely. And I still recommend for most two Aleve tablets twice a day, which is really what I think is a better therapeutic dose. So.
Well, we like hearing from you. Just send us your comments, questions, and tips in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Zorba, thank you very much.
A pleasure to be here, Tom, and stay well.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
And don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio, and our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg and Adam Friedrich are the troublemakers on the other side of the glass. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you're with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For a copy of today's show, call the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0303Z. To buy Zorba's book, The Longevity Code, Your Personal Prescription for a Longer, Sweeter Life, or to pick up a copy of Zorba's Heart Healthy Cookbook, just go to our website at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.